Welcome to Conversations with Evie and Elizabeth by Empower Survivors. This is a recording from our online meetings program happening every Monday evening at 6 p.m. Central Time. Each week, we will introduce conversation starters and discuss issues of interest for survivors of childhood sexual abuse and trauma. Evie and Elizabeth help you feel relaxed and supported in this interactive group that meets weekly to discuss issues pertaining to healing, wellness, mental health, and more. If you want to participate in the live meeting, engage in the conversation, or find some support, register online at empowersurvivors.net for our next live Zoom meeting. Privacy of all participants is a priority for us, so only our guest talk is being recorded for this podcast. Join us from the comfort of your own home as we introduce special guests and topics that are sure to be of interest. This is Elizabeth. I am the CEO and founder of Empower Survivors, a nonprofit organization of survivors helping survivors of childhood sexual abuse, providing safe spaces of healing. Visit our website and join the community at empowersurvivors.net. We don't have to do this alone. We believe you, we see you, we hear you, and we are here for you now.
Elizabeth is the founder and the director of Empower Survivors. We are a nonprofit for survivors of childhood sexual abuse. And every Monday night, we do conversations with Evie and Elizabeth. We encourage everyone to participate in the conversation. And tonight, I'm very, very excited. Both Elizabeth and I are very excited to introduce you to Carolyn Curtis. And I'm going to read a little bit of a bio about Carolyn, and then she will take it away. This will be fabulous tonight. Carolyn has 35 years experience as a clinician specializing in helping couples, persons with drug and alcohol abuse, and individuals who've experienced trauma. She has a deep understanding of the issues that people face in today's world. She is also the founder and director of the Relationship Skills Center. And while she was doing that, she learned the value of psychoeducational programs and the qualities that are essential for an effective curriculum. So we're going to be talking about what Carolyn developed tonight. I will let her describe all that. She's been an adjunct faculty member in the psychology department of CSU Sacramento and American River College, which I'm assuming is also in California. She has been teaching. She's also a therapist, a clinical trauma professional, and has presented papers at major national and international conferences, including the White House, where you received a Presidential Point of Light Award. Oh my gosh, that's fabulous. Congratulations.
I know, those are gonna be the highlights of my life when they, you know, what did you do? And that's it, by the way. Everything Evie told you, that is my epitaph right there. So,
that's pretty awesome. Well, welcome, Carolyn, and we will have you take it away now.
Okay, I will just wanna tell you my story about my invitation to the White House. I always thought that an invitation to the White House would come with a Marine at my door with white gloves. The invitation came in an email with a picture of the White House at the top of it, right? So I thought, this is an invitation to the White House. I want you to know that George Bush was not there, okay? I spoke in the Eisenhower room, but I still got the email with a picture of the White House at the top. So I was blown away with that. So let me just tell you where we're going tonight and then have you, you know, fortunately, this is a really small group. So we will have lots of opportunities for questions or comments as we go along. And as I told Evie and Elizabeth, this is the first, I have been talking about this topic for the last 5 years, but recently I have developed a new curriculum, a new part of this curriculum called Mind Matters Now. And I have never spoken about it before to a group. So I'm going to be trying this out with you as we go along. So I'm very excited. So we'll just start with this. So what's really wonderful is that, why did I develop this curriculum on trauma? I was inspired by the ACEs study that came out. And I said, this is a problem that we are not focused on. And this is a problem that we don't have enough therapists to deal with. And we have a large number of people who don't want to see a therapist. So we have to find a way to help people overcome the trauma in their life that is workable. So the big question I had is, what are we going to do about it? And fortunately, the good news is, as time has gone on, we've gotten better and better at determining what works in recovery or healing from trauma. So what I did was I put this all in a package, which I call Mind Matters. And we focus on skills to overcome adverse experiences. That was the first thing we did. And I developed this, probably it's been published now for about 3 years. And my exciting news is that we've sold over 550 copies. They've gone all over the United States. The Department of Mental Health for Los Angeles County has put it on their approved list. New Hampshire is using it for their program when people get out of their reentry program. People are using it in group homes and family resource centers and in various community agencies. That was what we were doing. And then COVID came along. My publisher said, let's do this online. So we got my master trainer and myself, and once a week for 12 weeks, we ran this Mind Matters class online. And we had between 400 and 600 people show up to take this class once a week. And then when we were finished, my publisher said, we need to put this on a disc so anybody could access it. And she got a grant. So normally something like this would cost $100, $150, but we now have it available for about $30, which is called Mind Matters Now. And it has this 12 hours of curriculum that's available for anyone to be able to do it. So yeah, let me give you some of the bottom line about where we go with this. And the first thing is that we look at all of this with a trauma lens. So instead of saying, look at what's wrong with this person, we really ask the question, what happened to this person? And then this next slide I'm going to show you and take a few minutes to talk about. I have been very, very sick. And my husband and I went to this conference or workshop on recovering from trauma for therapists. And this was the slide that inspired me. They did a meta-analysis, which meant they looked at 54 trauma experts and found the 6 paths for healing from trauma. Okay, now everybody else in this room are therapists, except for me. And I'm looking at this and I'm going, oh, 5 out of the 6 of these can be taught in a psychoeducational program. We can do all of this. The only thing we won't do is we won't do a narrative of the trauma memory, but we can build all of these skills so people can deal with their life. And then when or if they want to deal with the narration of their trauma, they can go see a therapist. And I want you to notice this because when I go over the rest of this, it'll all fall in place. So we look at emotional regulation, then cognitive restructuring, anxiety and stress management, interpersonal skills, and meditation and mindfulness interventions. And probably all of you in all of the workshops you've been coming to here have found these in a lot of the other presentations that people have brought you. Nod your head if that is accurate, or give me a thumbs up or go, yep, that's exactly what's been going on. Okay, and we've been dealing with all of these. Now, the next theory that goes with this is we cannot think our way into a new way of being. This is a Dan Siegel quote, but we can grow our brain. And what does this mean is that we just can't say to ourselves, well, just get over it, right? That doesn't work. Or actually, different people promoted putting up a big stop sign, stop thinking about this, you know, that doesn't work. And by the way, we used to do something called critical incident debriefing. Anybody ever heard of that? Well, the research now shows that it doesn't work. All of this stuff about analyzing what happened to you, you can't go look in this dark, dark well without sufficient self-soothing skills. So we have to grow the brain before we can deal with those things. Is all of this making sense, folks? Give me a thumbs up or hands up or I'm with you, Carolyn. This makes sense. Yes. Good. Now, this is a quote from my husband, and I just love it. The system, the nervous system is nonverbal. It doesn't speak English or Spanish or Farsi. Doesn't speak. What it does is it sends signals and sensations to the brain centers. And then the brain interprets these signals and sensations and assigns words and meaning to the experience. So if you try to intervene at the words and meanings, you're going to go nowhere in your interventions. All right. Does that make sense to some of you who are with me? Do you all know how to do the hands up thing? Like you're making sense, Carolyn. All right. Raised hand. Okay. Wonderful. So that's why so many things that you've tried so hard to make work don't work. So let's go back to what does work. And this is an old theory. It's been around forever. This is called Hebb's Rule by Donald Hebb, who came up with this in 1949. I can't believe we're using theories that have been around since 1949. And what he talks about is nerves that fire together, wire together. So we want to connect intrusive memories with a positive memory or a self-soothing skill so that we start making this new pairing between these two incidents. Also, it goes the other way too. When nerves fire out of sync, they lose their link. What that means is that if you have a nerve and it fires, but it's not connected to what was there previously, it just gradually disappears. So when something bad happens to us, we have an entire nervous system that goes into action because our brain changed from those horrible incidents. To get our brain cells to rewire, we need to change the contained memory. And we have lots of skills we'll talk about today about what you can do. And by the way, I want to just say very clearly, this is over time. There is no magic pill for this. Lord, I wish I could say, hey, you just do this and you just do it for a month or two and you'll be fine. Nope. You have a long story of recovery. The good news is that we know enough that you can recover. All right. We will continue to talk about things to do. Next is, this is my other favorite quote from Viktor Frankl. Between stimulus and response, there's a space. And in that space is our power to choose our response. And in our response lies our growth and freedom. So part of our self-soothing skills is to separate this out so that you have options and choices about what you're going to say and do. So that's one way we look at this, is developing enough ways so that when you have intrusive memories and things that are strongly affecting you, that you start breaking that connection, you build self-soothing skills and make space so that you have an opportunity for new responses. The other thing the research shows is that the other way of healing is in relationships. And this is one of my favorite quotes from Harville Hendricks. We are injured in relationship, and we are healed in relationship. And every time you make a new friend who's there for you, you heal just a bit more. When you get that somebody really understands you, and hopefully you're getting some of that from this group, is that somebody understands what happened to you. I guess I want to say, I'm going to get tearful. I have been so proud of our community's response to Simone, the gymnast, that people are saying, it makes sense to me that you are having a hard time. And so few people, there are a few, there always are a few, but mostly the world has come together and said, look, you take care of yourself first. And we're glad you told. Now that is how she will be healed. She'll be healed by her fellow gymnasts who still hold her and love her and care for her through all of this. That's how we get healed, is we are healed in relationships. And then the last one is creating habits of mind. And that means developing a, and this is part of our journal. So if you, I was talking about Evie and Elizabeth about possibly doing this class online through their organization. And what we, in our journals, we actually have a practice schedule so that you practice these skills so that they become new habits of mind. Because that's really what we have to create to get better, is new habits of mind. So we talk about becoming somebody who can wait. And what's wonderful is now we turn our whole focus on becoming somebody who can wait, somebody who can self-soothe. And we know that people who can wait, you know, do better in life. So the focus now is on waiting rather than on trauma. When I first started this curriculum, I put trauma in the name of the curriculum. I had people traumatized before they even started the class. I went, okay, we have to have a whole different name. So we came up with Mind Matters, Overcoming Adversity and Building Resilience. And these are the six skills that we focus on in Mind Matters: self-soothing and observing self, relationships, self-care, intentionality, and self-compassion. And that all goes together. And I'm sure as I go over this, you'll go, oh, that fits with the other seminars that I heard about. And this is how it all fits together. So we're going to start with self-soothing. Self-soothing is, you know, when we've been traumatized, our nervous system either becomes overreactive or underreactive. And so we need to grow our brain through self-soothing skills. And we teach a lot of different self-soothing skills. One skill is focused breathing. I just want to tell you that, you know, this is doing meditation. And I wanted to make sure I said today, meditation really works for a great number of people. And it also does not work for a great number of people. It's not one of my favorite self-soothing skills. So I don't want you to feel guilty because this hasn't worked for you. Part of this class is about figuring out which ones work for you and which ones don't. And that's an important skill. So not everybody is healed with the same self-soothing skills. So we know about focused breathing, but maybe you don't know about peripheral vision. How many of you know peripheral vision? I'm expecting nobody raising their hands. All right, good, because I wanted you to walk out with something you didn't know. So we're going to do this together. This is a self-soothing skill. And as usual, I want you to know that everything I teach is a bit weird. So this is another one of those a bit weird things. So what you do with peripheral vision, and I'm going to teach it to you, and then you'll be able to do it on your own. Put your fingers right in front of your face, about 6 inches in front of your face with your index finger up. And then you're going to move your fingers out to the side, just about at where your shoulders are, just where you can just barely, as you're looking forward, that you can just barely see these fingers wiggling. That's your peripheral vision. And when you look forward and you wiggle your fingers, you are soothing yourself. We're going to hold this for 10 seconds, 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, one. Now, did any of you notice that you got calmer doing that? Now, to just take this another step, we can't walk around in life going like this. I mean, people will think you're weird, and they think we're weird enough already, so we don't need to do that. But we can look right straight ahead and pay attention to the peripheral vision at the same time without our fingers. So let's do it again. You look straight forward, pay attention to your peripheral vision, and hold that for 10 seconds. 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Okay. Now, what's really great about this is nobody will ever know you're doing it. You may have a little 3-year-old who's losing it and jumping up and down and screaming, and you have to stay calm. Well, this is a great exercise because you can look right at that kid, but pay attention to your peripheral vision, and you can stay calm while they're doing that. My other favorite example is you've just gotten pulled over on the side of the road by a highway patrolman, and you have to stay calm. So you can look at him and stay calm. The person who taught me this, what he did, he had a problem with public speaking, and he actually did this exercise every 10 minutes while he was presenting. So put this in your resource book. Yeah, this is something I can use. All right. And then let me give you another one. All right. This one is called 5-4-3-2-1. This one people absolutely love. I have a group home that has been using this curriculum, and the kids ask for this from their staff. And this is when you really feel like you're going to lose it. And all of us have felt like we're going to lose it at some time. All right. A friend of mine actually was hiking in the Appalachian Mountains with a group of girlfriends, and they were all losing it. They were getting irritated and yelling and screaming at each other. And then they did this exercise and they got back in touch with the wonder of the environment that they were in. So let's just do all of this one together. Okay, look around and see 5 things that you see. Okay, now, 4 things that you hear. Three things that you're touching. Two things that you smell. And one thing, anything that you're tasting. This exercise is particularly good at bringing you back into the here and now, right now. So put this one in your toolbox, that you have that available to you when you need it. Now, the next one. This I consider one of the most powerful tools you can learn. It's called tapping, or emotional freedom technique. I don't have time to teach it to you today, but I will tell you, this is one of those items that when you have an intrusive memory or you're feeling poorly, what you do is you tap on acupressure points. Now, my favorite story about this is my husband, who's a senior mental health counselor for the county, was working with this woman. And every time she started getting anxious, he taught her to start using this method of tapping on these acupuncture points. And she did this. Now, I want you to know, as I said, I'm not promising you any quick fix here. He saw her for 2 years, and she walked in to his office one day and said, "I now know what happened to me. When I was quite young, I was molested and got pregnant. And my family sent me off to stay with this other family. And when I had the baby, they gave the baby away for adoption. And then I went back home and nobody mentioned it ever again." She said, "I didn't know whether it happened or not. But she now knows that she did. And I want you to catch what we did here. Is she told the narrative of her injury without a lot of emotion. Because when you, that is the goal, is to be able to recount your memory without being re-traumatized. Part of what you're doing in your healing is that you keep developing enough self-soothing skills so you're not re-traumatized when you think about this memory. And hopefully you don't have a therapist who wants you to tell the story of your trauma over and over again. You need to be developing skills to deal with what you are missing. Okay, the next one is developing an observing self. Now, what this means is that you need to be able to step back from yourself to be able to see what's going on with you. So you're not overreactive or you're not underreactive. So you're self-soothing and you're looking at yourself and seeing who you are and what's going on with you. So one of the first ways you do this, you learn how to do a body scan. You know, so many times when we've been traumatized, the way we've solved this problem is we have detached ourselves from our body, that we don't even notice our body. And a body scan allows us to start looking a detached way, but looking to see what is our body telling us. You know, Simone's body told her, you know, flying 15 feet above in the air is a dangerous place to be, twisting and turning. You are in danger and you've lost track of where you are. Stop. That took her being aware of her body. Step one is we need to be aware of our body and what it's telling us. The next is, and you probably heard this in other times, you need to develop emotional competence. Well, what is emotional competence? Emotional competence is being able to label the names of the emotions that you're feeling when you feel them, okay? And by the way we do this in this class is we watch the first 5 minutes of the movie Inside Out, or previews of the movie Inside Out. And that movie was developed by one of the premier psychologists at UC Berkeley who specialized in emotions. So when you look at that beginning of that movie about how the brain works, it's accurate because it really does tell you. And we have five primary emotions to take a look at. Next is we learn about our internal family systems. Now, what does that mean? And I know we're going fast and I know I'm teaching you a lot in a very short period of time. What we know is our emotions begin to be protectors for ourselves. Some of you may are angry. One of my favorite stories of one of my clients from years ago, grew up in Greece, and all of his family was killed in the Holocaust, except for his parents. His parents lost, he tallied 40 different people in their family who died. And they were still living in Greece, and the Greeks and the Turks were not getting along. And he said he remembered walking down the street and seeing people nailed to the cross. So his family decided it wasn't safe to be living in Greece. So they came to the United States, and his father got a job, and my client is now 10 years old. He and his dad get into this horrible argument, and his dad goes to work and dies in an industrial accident. Now, fast forward a number of years, this guy ends up a leader in his field, but what he has is an anger problem. He is just furious all the time and is about ready to lose custody of his children. So we talked about his anger and how it was a protector, that he didn't have to give up being angry. What he had to do was decide when he needed to use it, because it was a protector. And we have in our own internal way, our own internal protections. And we need to notice that, because so many of the times the things that we do to protect ourselves are exactly the things that injure us. And we have to find a way through all of that. And the next thing we do in this is we develop an internal journal. And this is about, you know, a long time ago when I first went into therapy for myself with the crazy family that I grew up in, people would say to me, Carolyn, you need to think. Oh, I had no idea what that meant. Think about what? Well, what we did was we developed an internal journal, which is how do you think your way through a problem? And this particular chart helps people figure out, how do I think about things? Because many times we are so reactive that we don't have a way to think about things. So I'm just going to go over this first line here. And this first line is really about that this is, I'm working with a group of seventh graders, and we picked an event to talk about. The event was they're going to have a test. So the first one is, and notice you'll see how we help them get in touch with the here and now, what's going on with them, and what senses told them that they were having a test. And they said they heard the announcement. So it was their hearing. What were their body sensations? Oh, shoulders tense, sweaty palms, trouble sleeping. So, oh, okay. Then the next one, what emotions do you have? Anxious and fearful. And what thoughts? I don't want to take this test. I'm stupid. I'll never get this right. And then any intrusive memories, previous failures on a test, being humiliated in class. The last one is what behaviors? The one student said, I watched videos instead of studying for the test until it was too late to study. And then we checked, how much did all of this bother you on a scale from 0 to 10? Was 0 not at all and 10 the most it could be? And they said about a 6. I want you to know, when I got these seventh graders who have been failing in every part of their life and they could do this chart, they were cheering because they understood. Now notice we took this and now we began the pairing of a negative event with a self-soothing exercise. So we talked about peripheral vision, focused breathing. For me, I would have preferred to have them do tapping. And they do that until they get there. And it's called subjective units of this discomfort scale down, so that we've now paired a negative event with self-soothing skills. And we do this over and over again until we have a different kind of response. We don't have enough time to do this today, but I also liked using The Wheel of Awareness by Dan Siegel, because this is about giving yourself permission to be aware of yourself, all of who you are, all of your senses, like we've been doing, noticing what your internal body system is doing. And then after you do that, then you start looking at your mental activities, like what is going on inside of me? What are my thoughts? Not only what are my thoughts, but how do my thoughts operate? Do they come in and stay? Do they come and fade away? How does my mental process actually work? And then in the last section, we start looking at our interconnectedness with all people. And this gives us the tools to be able to know where you are, who you are, and the world around us. Okay. All right. Now we're going to go to the next segment, which is relationship skills. And as I said, when we talked about this, is that we are injured in relationship and we heal in relationship. The good news is we're going to, I'm going to show you how to do this. And fortunately or unfortunately, Elizabeth volunteered. So she went, oh no, what have I done? But I want to show you what deep listening looks like, because this is a really healing exercise about how people can listen to us deeply. When I've taught this in a classroom, my students didn't want to stop doing it. They took this exercise into lunch, into their break, because this is like, oh, this is it. So the way this works is the first thing that happens is Elizabeth is going to tell me a story. Now, I want you to know, I asked her not to tell me a really early childhood story and not tell me the worst thing that ever happened to her, but just tell me a story out of her childhood. So she came up with one, and you'll see how this goes. All right. So go ahead, Elizabeth.
So the story I was saying that came to mind was being probably in seventh grade, middle school, and the class was able to go on a class trip. And so everybody was very excited about going, and I wasn't turning in paperwork. And so all the teachers in the grade were asking me, you know, about why am I not getting the paperwork back? Why am I not, you know, saying that I'm going? And the reason that I couldn't go was my mom was a single mother with four kids, and I just knew that she didn't have the money, so I didn't even want to ask her. I didn't want to put that burden on her.
Okay. Thank you, Elizabeth. That's great. That's great, but thank you for sharing that. All right. So now what I will do is retell the story. The secret about retelling this story is that I tell it as if it happened to me. So I'm Elizabeth. I'm about 12 years old. I'm in middle school. And everybody's going on this field trip, and they're really excited about going on this field trip. But I know we don't have the money to go. And I am so embarrassed that we don't have the money. I can't tell anyone this. I am all alone, and everybody's going to go on this trip but me. And I'm humiliated, and I can't talk about it. Is that accurate, Elizabeth?
Wow, yes.
Yes, okay.
Yes.
It's really powerful, isn't it?
Oh my gosh, that hurt a lot more than what I would think that it did.
Yes, uh-huh. But it's healing, like somebody finally got what happened to me. Mm-hmm. And, but now I know why this hurts so much. But it took having somebody hear it, really deeply hear it. So that is one of the skills we teach about relationships, is how to do deep listening. Thank you so much, Elizabeth, for sharing that. Then the next thing that we need to talk about is support systems. You know, so many times we act as if we have to do this all on our own. And we want you to know nobody does this on their own. You know, Elizabeth is not doing this seminar by herself. She's got Evie with her. And she wouldn't want to do it by herself because it's no fun doing this by yourself. So one is we want to give you lots of permission to build a gigantic support system. And many times we don't know that we need a support system. So we have all of these categories that you get to fill in the blank. And sometimes you have people who fill more than one hole. What I have loved about doing this is when I've done it in a high school, is we talked about who are your challengers. And I would say, do you have somebody in your school that really pushes everybody to be the very best they can, and they're really hard on you? And they all went, oh yes, that's our English teacher. That's how we know exactly who that is. And I will tell you my favorite story about me is I'm currently on my third husband. I eventually realized that I didn't know what I was doing trying to find a husband. And I will tell you, I use my support system in so many different ways. So one is looking, we'll just start with, of course, I asked all my friends if they knew somebody to introduce me to or at work. But some of the other things I did was I looked around for who had relationships like I wanted to have. And how did I feel around the men so that I would know I was around someone that I really would want to have a relationship with? The other one that was interesting is in this category was helpers. I have found that we have helpers in so many ways that we didn't know. I had one friend who said to me, when you find someone you're interested in, please introduce us so that I can check them out to make sure that they are really good. And I have learned, you know, with my history of abuse, that when I look for helpers, I need to get a cross check on who I am asking to help me, because I don't always pick the very best person to be helpers. Another category in this is the referral agent. And I have to laugh about this, is there are people who know people. You all know people who know people. When I started dating my current husband, who is the love of my life and maybe the best decision I ever made, lo and behold, he used to rent an apartment where the woman who was the receptionist for our office actually was the person that he worked for, the company that he was renting from. And every month he had to go in and pay his rent check. I had somebody who could tell me whether he paid his rent regularly, whether he was throwing wild and crazy parties. I had a whole resource of information about this man, because when I told her who I was dating, she said, oh, he is just wonderful. So we have these, all of these people that are out there we can draw on. We are relational creatures. And when we look at this, we can look at who we need and to allow ourselves to keep adding people to our support network. And the last one, and if you have a small piece of paper around, I want you to grab it. Identify a trusted adult. You know, they have studies that have been going around for a really long time about, and one in particularly was one done by Emily Werner in a low income area in Hawaii. She studied nearly 700 people over 40 years. And she was on Kauai. And then she followed them for a very long time. And what did she discover? She discovered that the people who survived, now it doesn't mean they were not affected by the trauma in their life, but they were able to go on and do well. What they had was they had a trusted adult in their life. And I want you to think right now about, who do you trust? And do you have a trusted adult? And if you have a little teeny post-it note, that's the very best. But if not, just any small piece of paper. Write the name of the person that you trust, that you know has your back. You know, that they're the person on a difficult day. If you called them and wanted to talk with them, and at the end of the conversation, you knew you would feel better. Okay. Write the name of that person on that piece of paper. And then fold it up and put it in your wallet, in your purse, in your pocket, and carry it with you so that you have that with you wherever you go. Okay, now we're going to go on to category number 4, which is self-care. And this is a whole range of different things. One is, you know, there's this new ad on television about sleep and how not getting adequate sleep can just destroy your life. And junk sleep, I think it's called. They are so right about, you just cannot function if you're not getting good sleep. So you need to do things to help with sleep, which is no caffeine 3 hours before you go to bed, no exercise 3 hours before you go to bed, turn off all electronic devices an hour before you go to bed. Blue lights, those little blue lights on all of our electronic things, they confuse our brain. They get our brain to think that it's daytime. So you need to turn off all those blue lights. Exercise is absolutely crucial. At least a half hour every day to get your body going, to get rid of all of those endorphins, all of those, not endorphins, but all that adrenaline out of your body and where to go. You know, I want to tell you, I talk about this because all of these things make my life work. I grew up in a traumatic home. My first husband died when I was 28 years old. My second husband embezzled funds and ended up in prison, leaving me, wait, do you hold on to your hat, $900,000 in debt and owing the IRS $100,000. And I have an 8-year-old. My current husband has had heart problems for over 15 years. He had AFib. 2 heart surgeries later, he's doing great. And currently, I have multiple myeloma. I have to live with everything I'm teaching you. This is not me out there as this super intellectual. I am this person who's in the trenches with you, figuring out how to make life work. And by the way, talking with you and being with you today makes my life work. So I need exercise every day. For me, what I adopted instead of meditation or yoga is I take ballet classes, and that's what works for me. And the next one I want to comment on is rhythm. Trauma, we lose our rhythm with trauma, and we have to find our rhythm again. And in rhythm, we're talking about music and drums. And I'm just going to have us do this for just a very short period of time. I'm going to play you Sarah Bareilles' song, Brave. And she wrote this song after she volunteered working in domestic violence shelters. And these are the words she wanted to give all the women in the domestic violence shelter. So we're going to just listen to this. And what I'm going to invite you to do, and I know I'm always asking you to do stuff that's just a bit out of the comfort zone, is I want you to chair dance. And what is chair dancing? It's just wiggling your shoulders to the beat of the music and moving your head. Not, you don't have to get up or do anything, but just let yourself enjoy this music. Okay, so here we go.
Amazing, turn crazy, into a weapon of wardrobe. You can be the outcast, be the backlash of somebody's lack of love. Or you can start speaking up. I'm gonna hurt you, the way the words do, and they suddenly be scared. Get to the inside and be so light, sometimes a shadow ends. I wonder what would happen if you say what you want to say. The words fall out. Honestly, I want to see you be brave. What you want to say. The words fall out. Honestly, I want to see you be brave. I want to see you. I just want to see you. Just wanna see you. I wanna see you be brave. Wanna see you. I just wanna see you. Just wanna see you. I wanna see you be brave.
Please go ahead and listen to the rest of the song. I can't listen to that song without ending up tearful, because it is really about go for it. Go for it. Get out there and do it. All right. So I'm going to take a deep breath here and go on to the next slide, which is the next point is having a life of intention. And I've been thinking a lot about this, is that people who've been traumatized have so much about their past that interferes with their life. And a life of intention is about becoming future focused. That is what we're talking about here, is knowing what you want to do and what you want to create so that you stay focused on where you're going and what you're going to do. For me, I say, I don't want my life to be about having cancer. I want my life about being about what I'm doing now, that this cancer thing is just an aside kind of thing. All right. This is a life of intention. This is me being with you today and being a part of your life and your recovery and your healing. That's my life of intention about what I want. So what that means is that we need to have a roadmap for success. That really requires us to look into the future and decide what it is that we want for our own future, and to go ahead and dream big. And a lot of times, one of the things that people do who've been traumatized is they take something negative that has happened to them and turn it into something positive. That's what I'm doing right here. That's what Elizabeth and Evie are doing. And that's what all of you are doing, is you're taking something negative and moving it into something positive by looking for your success in the future. Okay, then the next one is, we talk about developing a code of honor. And I love this, because when we've been traumatized, we have so many negative self-statements that we have managed to make up about ourselves. And what we really need to do is figure out who we want to be and what do we want our self-statement to be. And that is our code of honor. So in our workbook, we go through and pick sentences or statements about who we want to be. And this little shield over here was developed by one of my students who said, who I am is someone who's loyal, someone who cares about beauty, I am logical, creative, and fit. And that's who I am. And give yourself a chance to create this new self-statement about who you are. The last one is having compassion for yourself, because we know that this trauma hijacked your brain. It took it someplace else. And what we want to believe, because we've had this horrible experience, is that the problem is out there. It's not part of us. It's because of the past. It's because of other people. But sometimes these belief systems keep us stuck, all right? Because we really know these are experiences that happened to you. And this trauma changed your thinking, and the ability to change the future or ourselves seems absolutely impossible. The problems seem as if they're out there and beyond our ability to change. And that belief keeps us stuck. So I want you to remember when you leave here that, first of all, you were not born bad. You had no control over what happened to you. And whatever you did to cope was appropriate, and that you can change. This is not your fault. It's what happened to you. And there are ways to fix it. So Mind Matters and this whole curriculum is about building resilience, which is an ability to recover from or adjust to misfortune or change. So by practicing the skills in this class and letting the learning sink in, your internal reactivity will change, your brain grows, you'll notice what's going on inside your body, you're aware of your body sensations, emotions, and feelings, and you can think about what you're thinking, feeling, and doing, and make changes. And then be quiet. And as you do this with self-soothing methods, the world will open. You'll have choices. You can start accepting and understanding yourself and others. Our goal here is to change our internal reactivity so that you can create something new, rich, and wonderful. So, a couple of things. Self-care takes a lot of time, and there are many choices to make. One of my girlfriends recently said, "I don't know whether I can go to work. By the time I meditate and exercise and eat well, there's no time for work," because self-care really takes a lot of time. Okay, use what you've learned to make good choices regarding your helpers and bringing people in your life to join you and take you further in your journey. Consider using Mind Matters now. And I want to say to you that you can just purchase this online and run this class for yourself, so you can take it now to help you on your way to recovery. Remember that recovery takes time. Okay. So this is the website where you can find Mind Matters now, or my email address if you'd like to contact me. And we did this quite well. So I'm wondering, we have some time for questions and dialogue, which is what I know Elizabeth and Evie really wanted us to do. So I have left some time for us to actually have a conversation.
Thank you. Thank you. Oh my gosh, Carolyn, thank you so much. I really appreciate it. We all do. There's so much. I have so many notes. It was just so motivating and inspirational and so hopeful, and just all the verbs. It's just so.
Oh, thank you, Evie. Yes, thank you very much. Yes.
And we will make sure, Carolyn gave us permission to share the slides. So if you guys want to email me, then we can share the slides with you, and then we'll make sure all of this information is put out in the closed Facebook group. So I'm wondering, would you be okay if you closed your PowerPoint, and then we can see everybody, and then you guys just go ahead and raise your hands and let's have a conversation.
I just wanted to say real quick, Carolyn, really good presentation. I really enjoyed it, and I look forward to hearing what others think about it and hearing the questions that they may have. So thank you so much.
Thank you for listening to Conversations with Evie and Elizabeth by Empower Survivors, a nonprofit organization of survivors helping survivors, providing safe spaces of healing. It is an honor to have you here and be a part of your healing journey. Join us for one of our next online meetings on Mondays and support groups on Thursdays. For more information about our programs, visit empowersurvivors.net. We don't have to do this alone. We believe you, we see you, we hear you, and we are here for you now.